Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Morales. I can tell we're past the spring semester just by the way he's dressed today. It's Morehead State Police Chief Matt Sparks is our guest today. He's got a MSU polo on. He's kicking back. You could tell it's Margaritaville.
That's right. That's
Chief
right.
Sparks.
That's right, Chuck.
Well, a good year for you guys at the police department?
Yes, sir. Has been a good year. Been a busy year. Sure has.
Well, you had a very busy Saturday with the two graduation sessions, and I know there's a lot of logistical work that has to go into the planning of that and then the actual execution of the plan.
Yes, sir, and as always, the weather doesn't always cooperate with us. You had a little rain as our first commencement was starting. And not a great deal of rain, but enough rain to just kind of make things a little more hazardous.
Well, how is it different, perhaps, than when you talk about dealing with a graduation day than, say, an MSU basketball game at the arena or a football game at the stadium there? Because you deal with large crowds, but at the same time, I guess the graduation is two sessions for one.
Yes, sir. You have the graduation is two sessions, and also most of the time at our ball games, not always, you have some first-time visitors, but most of the time at graduation, you have a lot of people in town who've just been to campus for the first time, so they're not quite as sure where to park or, some of the other, the ball game. Like I said, most of the time the fans have been there before, so they know little shortcuts, little places they can pull and park that people coming to graduation don't always know about.
You also now utilize the big lot that's across 60, the overflow lot, and you use the shuttle bus. Does that help things?
Yeah, that's helped quite a bit. We started using that lot the last couple of years and using the shuttle buses on campus to bring visitors up and trying to get away from the gravel lot directly across from the AC just because of safety concerns. They're the overflow lot that we're running the shuttle from. There's a red light there, and people can pull in and out. Even the people who decide to walk can cross at the light. Whereas if we try to use the gravel lot across from the AAC, we don't have the luxury of having that light. So we're depending on, we're only as safe as the best pair of wiper blades, I guess, on that particular Saturday, that as far as visibility and getting traffic to stop and trying to get people across US 60. So the shuttle, that lot has really helped as far as the safety concerns.
Well, I could tell that there's a lot of people, obviously, from driving myself on the 60 bypass from where I live, just east of town, back through town that day. I made that mistake, and I wound up getting stuck in traffic. A lot of people here, and the duties that you have don't just include traffic on graduation day, do they?
No, sir. We have a crew. I usually try to stay outside. We also have an inside crew, just kind of watching and keep making sure people are safe inside. So we have officers inside and outside the building, and then we're still taking care of any issues that pop up on campus that day. So graduation day is always a full, busy day on our plate.
Well, you had two full houses at Johnson Arena, didn't you?
Yes, there was. But both sessions, as we were looking at it this year, some of the officers and I were talking and wondering just how we managed to do that in one session for so long, because both those sessions, there was very few empty seats at either session. So there's been no way you could combine that into one session.
You just completed year five as chief, correct?
Six.
Six.
You're right. Completed year five, starting my sixth.
So you're into year six right now. But 5 years of school, academic calendars,
yes,
basically. So you've gone through that. And what have you learned during that time about the job?
I really enjoy the job, Chuck. I like the one thing, I guess, to answer that I've learned is that you're constantly dealing with the new class. Each year you're dealing with freshmen who are coming in, so you can't take for granted they know the rules or they know where to park, where not to park. They know that you're not always mature enough to, or I don't say mature enough, but you always deal with that freshman class, and it's just like every year you're going back And a lot of times your upperclassmen actually will help you. I hear upperclassmen talking to them all the time. So, you can't do that. You can't be out here drinking and driving. You're going to get called into town or on campus. You can't be out here. You can't stumble back to campus intoxicated. The police are going to catch you. So you'll hear these upperclassmen a lot of time trying to help freshmen as they come in.
So word of mouth is almost your best help.
Yes, it is. It sure is. You're right.
The job, has it changed much since you started, or is it pretty much the same? Or are there some nuances maybe that are a little bit different?
No, it's pretty much the same. I haven't seen a lot of change in it. I hate to keep going back to parking, but that is obviously a big concern for students and faculty and staff alike. And this year, this fall, will be a change, because we're doing some, you know, they're doing some renovation on campus. I believe Waterfield's scheduled to go down, and so we may lose some parking and kind of move parking around. I know that Dr. Andrews wanted to do some changing on the boulevard and the parking along the boulevard eventually. I don't think that's going to go this fall, but it's something will be coming up pretty soon, I believe.
And that's always the biggest issue, as you mentioned, especially when you start a new semester, is everybody getting used to the rules. And because of some of the building projects, some of the traffic routes change from year to year on campus.
Just about every summer, you know, we do a lot of construction, and you're right, that those traffic routes change, those parking locations. Sometimes we'll have to, in fact, this year, instead of printing up a parking brochure, because we knew there's some changes coming during the year, we've kind of asked everybody to refer to our webpage for continued parking changes.
I know that just about a year ago, because I had to deal with your office about this, I was the victim of a car that had hit my car in a lot, kind of ruined one side of the car, right, and just drove off. I know that, as I was told by one of the officers I spoke to, said that's a continuing problem, just people kind of bashing in other vehicles and then taking off because I guess they get scared or whatever.
It is, you know, and it's sad that that's the case, but we see that. That's common during the school year, you know, and I know there's probably a few of those occasions where it's maybe a young driver who's driving a big vehicle and maybe doesn't realize that they actually bump or nick someone else's vehicle. But I think that's a rare occasion. Most of the time I think they know and they're just choosing not to stop. But that does happen, like I said, because we've actually located several kids, and even this past school year, that we've either had a vehicle description or got a looking for, you know, paint. We knew it was the color vehicle. We looked for damage on a particular side, and couldn't find out it'd be a young driver driving an inexperienced driver driving an oversized vehicle. Didn't realize the bumper, you know, clipped someone else as they were back in or turning. Like I said, most of the time I think they realize it, and they just, for whatever reason, choose not to stop or let us notify.
Just get scared,
that's
think.
Right. Right.
And then I'm still looking for the vehicle.
For years, yeah.
By the way. So is my insurance company.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, that's right.
What do you do in situations like that? Is there anything you can do? I know that when I spoke to the officers who came out to the scene, they said, we don't have security cameras on campus. And there are some campuses now that are going to that, but I guess that's also extremely costly.
Yeah, that is. And we've talked about that. It's odd because we're actually talking not just for the parking lots, but – you know, we're doing some. Actually, we've been in discussions with improving some of those camera coverage, especially in parking lot areas. But so I think that's something you're going to see in the future is some more security cameras on campus, especially in parking areas.
Any idea on how much that might cost? I think is UK doing this now?
A lot of the universities. I know UK has. I don't know how many cameras or how many lots they have cameras in, but. But, yeah, I think all the universities are kind of doing that. And, just depend on, you know, we've actually had some vendors come in and give us some estimates, and you can spend as little as $200 or $300 on a camera and as high as $6,000 or $8,000 on a camera. So it just depends on what capabilities you're looking for in that camera, you know, whether you want to be able to read a license plate with that camera, identify a person with that camera, or if you're just – you know, just the general view. So just depending on there's a wide range of estimates out there. Depending on, you can put as much or as little money as you want to put into it, I guess.
And think about it. This is not the biggest campus on the planet.
It's
a nice, tight campus in a small area. But in order to put in security cameras to make sure that they cover all the areas that you want covered, I would think it would take a lot of them.
It would. We're, like you said, even though we're relatively small, we're still kind of – when you start looking just the parking lots and on this campus, you know, they are kind of spread out. And again, depending on the camera or the view you're trying to get with that camera, it can get quite expensive.
And then you're looking at, as you mentioned, it's not just an issue with traffic and parking. There are some other safety concerns that could cause the implementation of the video cameras.
Exactly. Actually, the Student Government Association, we do the campus safety walks each spring and each fall with student government and other student members. We'll walk across campus looking for lighting or safety issues, and the Student Government Association really the one that started saying, hey, why don't we look at getting some more cameras? And I said, hey, I would be love to do that. So they really got us involved and got some of the decision makers to sit at the table, and so that's something I think you're going to see in the near future is some increasing in cameras on campus.
I think you bring up a really good point, Matt, that you work with the administration and also the students talk about trying to provide a better atmosphere for campus safety.
Oh, yes. You know, we always get their opinion. Each year, each semester, we involve the students. and you know, they're the ones out here walking but to and from class. They're the ones that have the concerns. You know, if they come through an area that, and more than once we went through an area, you know, because you know where the sidewalks lie, and you know that's the probably the major area where people walk. But a lot of times the students say, yeah, but we cut through this way, or we'll cut, you know, they'll know where the shortcuts are. So that's the areas we use them to say, hey, help us, show us where we need more lighting, show us where you have concerns about. So, and they're always good to do that.
Is it my imagination, but has the lighting system on campus improved a lot?
It has. And I think a lot of that is because of the safety walks. And I, like I said, we've been doing it 5 years with me, and I believe the former chief and Madonna, the vice president of student life, I'm not sure how long they've been doing those campus safety walks, but I know ever since I've been here, and it wasn't something I started. It was in place before I came. So I think it's a result of that. The students, you know, we do them not just only – obviously, we do them at nighttime. So we see those low-lit areas.
So do your officers kind of just check up on those low-lit areas as they're out patrolling at night?
Oh, certainly. You know, anytime a student brings a concern to us, we always, you know, we make sure that we kind of put a little extra patrol in that particular – with that concern.
I know that one thing that you've done consistently since you've been here, Matt, as the chief at Morehead State, is you've tried to build up the visibility of your officers.
Certainly.
Along with – doing a public relations campaign with the students to make sure the students know that the cops are not the enemy,
right?
They're the friends.
Right. And, you know, and I've stressed that to my guys, and my guys are all on board with that. We, you know, so many times people's interactions with the police are negative. You know, you're getting a ticket, or you're being arrested, or you're being told to turn the music down. And so many times, especially on our campus, like I said, those interactions with students and police are negative for the most part. So I've kind of pushed the guys to get out there, make residence hall visits. You know, they'll hang out in the lobbies. They won't go up, you know, on the floors unless they're asked or unless they have a complaint. But, you know, getting out of the cars, getting on more foot patrols, more bike patrols, more Segway patrols, so that you can have conversation with the students. You know, the students will approach you and the officers will approach the students and just get to know each other. So it just makes it a lot better when a student does want to make a report, or, you know, if they know that officer, they've seen an officer around. So yeah, it's I think it's really increased our communication with our students.
Your background includes a long stint with the Kentucky State
Police.
You were a post commander, you were a detective, you worked in internal affairs. I mean, so you run the gamut. But when you talk about being a campus police officer, the attitude has to be a lot different, doesn't it? Because you're dealing with basically 18 to 22-year-olds.
It is, you know, it is different in the fact that, you know, the law is the same, of course. You know, if someone violates the law, the statutes are spelled out. But one of the main things that we see and we try to do different is, you know, if we have a student that's maybe tiptoeing around breaking the law, maybe there is, we try to use every situation as, even though we're not, you know, we're not teachers, we're not professors, but even in our interactions with our students, our officers try to use that as to help educate the student, to help teach the student. For instance, I have a young man in the office a couple weeks ago, and he was upset. He was saying some things pretty loud that he shouldn't be saying in any setting, but a little longer public setting, and complaining it wasn't fair. He'd been told, and I explained to him, young man, this is not the last thing in your life that you're going to disagree with or that you think is not fair. There's a right way and a wrong way to address those problems. You're going to have those things in your life. And let me tell you, when you disagree with something, there's a way that you disagree, but not by coming in and cursing and screaming. And so we, even that, we try to use, like I said, to kind of teach the students.
I think you bring up another good point, Chief, in the sense that what we're doing here at Morehead State is not just about educating a student in their academic discipline. We're educating them about how to deal with society and preparing them to live with other people as they move forward from MSU.
You're exactly right. It's you know, like we, you know, when you say much more, you know, as we kind of hold on to that too at the police department, where we know we're much more than a police department. We do more than maybe a typical police department because of, like you said, with the young people we're interacting with, the young people we're trying to help prepare them. You know, they are the working class of the future. You know, we're trying to help prepare them.
They're going to be taken care of.
Exactly.
Us,
that's exactly right.
Short amount.
They're
going
to be picking our nursing homes, Chuck. You know, that's.
Well, has this job kind of met your expectations, or have there been things that maybe have surprised you about this job?
Yes and no. I really can't. Yes, it has surprised me as far as the number of just the number of responses, the number of students that are on campus any time of day or night. You know, I grew up in this town from here in Round County, went to school here myself. But until I came across this campus at 3 o'clock in the morning on a May or, you know, after the weather breaks and it's pretty nice, I was amazed to see the number of students that are out walking around campus at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's just, so this kind of surprised me as far as the not just the number of students that are here, but just their interactions, you know, with us at the police department, with the faculty and staff here. So there's been some good surprises.
Again, our guest today on the front page is the chief of the Morehead State University Police Department, Matt Sparks. I'm Chuck Mraz. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for MSPR comes from the Community Recycling Center in Morehead. Funded in part through a grant from the Kentucky Division of Waste Management, a second green recycling trailer will be rotating among Elliottville, Hayes Crossing, Farmers, and at the MMRC Fire Department on Kentucky 801 North. In addition, a green recycling trailer will always be located across from Walmart in a parking lot at the community park. The rotating trailer schedule is online at moreheadrecycling.org.
Welcome back to the front page. I'm Chuck Mraz, your host, and again, we're joined by Morehead State Police Chief Matt Sparks. Matt, I know one thing you did quite a bit of in the state police was investigate sexual assaults. I know that's a big concern for parents who are sending, especially young ladies, to a campus away from home. And, I mean, the one thing that we've always talked about here at MSU is how safe this campus is.
Yes, sir. We've been fortunate that, you know, for the last 3 years in a row, we've been chosen based on our crime stats as the safest campus in the state. And that's based on our crime stats and the type of crimes that we have on campus. But, of course, there's always that threat of, you know, because you're a safe campus or because you're a safe community doesn't mean that something bad can't happen any day or any time. But we are fortunate. And I think even though I'd like to sit here and say, hey, it's because our police department does such a great job, and we may deserve some credit, but I think more of the credit goes to the type of students that are coming to Morehead State. You know, we're, for the most part, our students are coming, you know, they want to be here. They're here for the right reasons, and they're not here to cause trouble or create problems.
Any idea on how many sexual assault cases you've had worked this over this last year or alleged sexual assaults?
We actually, and of course the school's out, so I guess I can't bring us any bad luck by saying, but this past year was the first. Usually we respond to about one per semester. We have one reported rape per semester, but this past school year, we were fortunate we did not have a reported sexual assault.
Any idea why?
No, I don't. We've actually, myself and Dr. Brenda Wilburn, have actually done quite a bit of talking on campus and making sure people know how to report. She's got it. She actually became a SANE nurse, which is a sexual assault nurse examiner, went through that training so that she can now do rape and sexual assault exams on campus. If the victim chooses that, they still have the option to go to St. Clair, but if that victim says, hey, I don't want to go to the emergency room, I don't want to go in there, she actually has that training ability now to do those type of exams on campus. We have our sexual assault response team here on campus we've got out in front of a lot of student groups and talked about reporting and talking about if you hear, you know, if that happens, make sure you call, you know, the kind of do's and don'ts of sexual assault. And actually, like I said, we were surprised that we got the police department didn't receive any reports this past school year of any type of sexual assault.
And that's great, obviously. And I know that since you've worked these are extremely delicate situations,
sure.
Very difficult to investigate. And when you talk about, I hate to say it, when you get into college situations, a lot of times alcohol could be involved. And, I mean, it's got to be an extremely complicated thing to deal with.
It is. It is. Like you said, police officers, for the most part, are used to, I hope it doesn't happen to you, but you go home tonight and your house has been burglarized. You call, the police show up, and you tell them the time you left, the time you came home, what's missing. It's a pretty easy interview with an officer to sit down and interview a victim of most cases. But you take a sexual assault case, that's all different. You know, it's not easy. You know, the victim's not always willing to tell you everything that happened. The victim's not eager to find a lot of times or eager to prosecute or eager to discuss the issue. So it's difficult from the start, a sexual assault investigation.
You're getting into the summer with your department. I know that's when you start to do a lot of training for potential situations. We talked about active shooter situations because that's been a problem in other places. But you try to train for various scenarios. What comes up for you this summer? What are you going to be training for?
We try to do a little active shooter training and active threat. You know, nowadays we try to, you know, in case you would have a, you know, the terminology they all used to use was active shooter, but now, you know, they've kind of turned that terminology to active threat. In the case you got a guy with a knife or some other type of weapon, but with Waterfield coming down, any time that we know we have a building coming down, the police department, our eyes light up.
Because you can go in there and wreck it.
That's right. We can go in there. We don't have to worry about breaking glass. We don't have to worry about the scuffing walls or floors, and so we're going to do some. We're all going to have a good time. In fact, we'll get you come up if you want.
Oh, I'd like to do that. That'd be fun. I remember playing cops and robbers when I was a kid quite a bit. So I'm all for it. So just give me a call.
We'll sure do it.
But I mean, those training sessions are extremely important because you try to make them as realistic as possible, so that when the officer, if they, God forbid, ever have to deal with a situation like that, that it's like muscle memory kind of kicks in. They know exactly what to do.
That's exactly right. It's been proven time after time, not just in police work, but any time that you're looking at a high-stress reactions, that you will react the way you're trained. So, you know, years ago, when I first came into state police in 1986, officers would shoot at a firing range, and we were carrying a .357 Magnum back then, and the revolvers, and we'd shoot at a firing range, and the guys would just dump their cylinder out, dump their spent rounds into their hand, put them into their pocket so they wouldn't have to go back and police up the firing range. And nobody wanted to go back and pick up all those brass after they got through shooting. But there was, across the country, there were some shootings that particular year back in, the mid-'80s, where they found police officers who had been shot and killed in shootout situations who had the empty brass in their pocket, where they had to stop and reload. So they had reacted in a high-stress situation. Instead of dumping that brass on the ground, they put it in their hand and put it in their pocket because that's the way they had trained. So they really, we go back to training, and you mentioned how you try to train real life as possible. That's how your training affects you. You know, you can imagine an officer in a shootout but still taking the time worried about picking up his brass. And that wasn't the case, but just because he trained that way on a firing range, putting that empty brass in his pocket. You know, so yes, you train real life anytime you train.
Here a couple of years ago, probably now a few years ago, we banned texting and driving on campus.
Certainly.
Before the state actually did. Have you had many instances of that you've had to deal with?
You know, I since that's happened, I personally haven't seen any citations where officers have written. But just about 3 weeks ago, I cited the first person for texting and driving. And actually, it wasn't a student. I was going out to Connector on my way home. You know, and you know how evening traffic is in this town at 4:30, between 4:30 and 5 o'clock. Bumper to bumper going out the connector, and I'm in the right lane, and this young lady's coming up beside me in the left lane, and I look, and she is texting, and I probably for a half mile out the connector, and I first thought she was dialing. I kept waiting for her to hold the phone to her ear, thinking or see her lips moving, that she maybe was speaking through a speakerphone, but as I continue, she's texting, traffic stopping, people stop in front of us, she almost hits a guy in the rear end, so in fact, it was so much traffic, I never got in behind her to get her pulled over. And finally pulled over. So, like I said, I wrote my first citation for texting, even though the law passed a year and a half ago.
Well, I'm glad you haven't had to write that, because that means people aren't doing it.
Well, no, I wish I could say that, but it's just one of those things that's hard to catch. You know, it's just a hard violation to catch. You know, even if you see someone, you just got to be, the circumstance got to be just right. I just happened to roll up right beside her. I could see in her vehicle. But that doesn't happen that often. So it's going on a lot more than what law enforcement want to see. It's just a hard violation to catch.
She may have been really locked in then. If she didn't even see you next to her,
that's right,
and she was texting and driving, she really had to be focused on that.
Yeah, of course, I was in an unmarked car, but I was in uniform that day. So, so that wasn't hard to miss.
Well, Matt, it's always good to have you on the front page. We appreciate the time, and good luck to you and your officers.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Matt.
Moorhead State University Police Chief Matt Sparks, our guest today on Front Page. I'm Chuck Meraz. See you next time.